Hello, this is Jack Vaughn. I'm together with my colleague Ed Burns today for this edition of the Talking Data Podcast. What we're doing is we're actually digging in a bit to the data today, talking about a workshop that some of us attended. It was a workshop on how to use programming code to tell a journalist's story. It's sort of a variation on data science, but for us it was kicking the tires and getting a chance to look deeper. Today we're really glad to have the guest Diana Wong, who's a content development strategist at TechTarget, which is our parent company. Have come to be a content development strategist after a lot of serious journalism covering the reseller markets and the Microsoft milieu, and correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you are correct. And I made the jump when TechTarget started the content development strategy group. And one of the things that I've been interested in all along has been data journalism. And recently, Jack and I attended a workshop hosted by the New England Science Writers Association, and it was talking about coding and how to use programming code to tell science stories.
Yeah, well, it was pretty interesting for me. Facts in journalism have always been the best way to proceed, but now with data available, people are trying to make it more intrinsic to their efforts, and so that's what we're doing. And what we picked that day as a test topic was to try and find something out about the California drought. It's been going on for a few years. There's some data on what's been going on. And one of my big impressions is that we really did spend a good amount of time trying to massage the data, get it to a point where we could use it. We tried different tools, but why don't you expand on that?
As Jack said, we definitely spent a bit of time looking for the data, so we had to go through several state and government agencies to find the correct data for California, and on top of that, layer the U.S. Census data as well. And that took a bit of time trying to access the right data that we needed, and then once we had it, it was time-consuming to actually download the data and manipulate it. Fortunately, through my previous jobs as an analyst, I was able to use Excel, and while others also used Python. One of the things that we could do was actually do a cross-check on the data. Using Excel, we could manipulate the data, create pivot tables, and basically access the specific data that we needed. Others in our group used Python, and they pulled in the data set as well. So we can kind of cross-check the data to make sure that whatever we were looking at was the same.
Yeah, well, it seems the case that Excel is still the most popular damn tool in the world. And a journalist, it's hard to find one that actually can make Excel work, but when they do, that they stick with it. One of the issues we had was, you know, we were able to see things and move things around in Excel, and did we really need to go to Python? I'm going to turn now to Ed, who's with us today, who's been doing some work with R, and I think he told me he had some experiences along the same lines.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, I definitely agree with the issues on collecting data and structuring it in such a way that it can be manipulated. That's definitely one of the issues that I've had as I've been taking some online classes in R. R is interesting in that it seems relatively simple to get started with. The initial barriers to entry are relatively low. I think most people can sit down with it and you know, start to do some moderately interesting things. But then when you encounter issues like, you know, pulling in larger data sets and then progressing on to more advanced features of R, like writing functions or, you know, building more involved algorithms, that's where it seems to get really challenging.
So Diana, a little further on, we started to use a sort of a web service that helped bring some graphical view on the data, and what was that called, and what was how'd that go?
So we used a an application called CardoDB, and it was really interesting to be able to take the data and actually map it. So what we ended up having was a map of California and where the drought impacted the counties the most. And one of the issues, however, that I found that even though the app itself was generally easy to use, we actually had to go through a bit of work to actually clean up the data. So in order for us to actually show the correct data, we actually had to first clean it and make sure that everything was, the data set was in the right order in order to actually prepare this this map that came out of the project. The one thing that I would say was that there's actually quite a few free, I guess, web-based kind of apps that actually do this. So if anyone is interested in visualizing data, there's the apps are made so that non-statisticians or journalists like ourselves can actually use the applications, visualize the data to tell the story in a different way.
Well, I would add to that. It was an interesting experience in the ways of data. There are so many formats, and as the more I cover data, the more formats I find. In one issue we had, there's different ways to describe a county. I think some are sort of map-based, some are based on the U.S. Census, and really you don't know until you muck with it if what you have is going to work with what you're working with.
And yeah, just to get back to Diana's point, I think that is the availability of relatively easy to use applications. I think that's where journalists like us are going to have the most luck in being able to dig deeper into data. I know from my own reporting, there's just an explosion of tools out there right now that try to automate as much of the actual data science as possible. So maybe you don't need to be an expert in R programming, but you can still, like Diana was saying, build some pretty detailed and data-rich maps. And I think that there are a lot of applications for that kind of thing, not just mapping, but all kinds of data science.
So I suppose there's some chance that we have a little knowledge and will be more dangerous in the future as we try and deal with data and stories. But what I really think is that we are gaining a better understanding of issues. And at this point, I'd like to thank Diana Wong for joining us today. And Ed, I will see you the next time. Stand by for a Talking Data Podcast Extra. So what else would we like to talk about here that we didn't get into that a little bit? We're still running.
I think I would like to mention JavaScript. I know there's a lot of data journalists now who have learned JavaScript in order to bring more animation into their visual data. And I think as a data journalist, it is a very useful tool that we can all learn the basics of JavaScript to add more value to how we tell our stories in the future. I think if we were able to spend more time during the workshop, we probably could have developed some interesting ways to call out each of the counties in a much more animated fashion versus a static static graphic. And you could probably call out and animate a county, pull it up in the screen, add additional data and information as the user mouses over the graphic. It's a really powerful way, I think, to show what could be very boring data, just numbers only, in a manner that enables the readers and the audience to actually capture the essence of a story.
I think data, standing still is a bit dull, but when you see it moving, you get ideas about what's happening. Well, gosh darn, it's something fun to do something different. And again, thank you, Diana. And telling Ned, I look forward to seeing you next time, and telling our audience that we're glad you could accompany us for this episode of Talking Data Podcast.